Okay, thank you. Welcome everyone. Commissioner David Salazar, joined by my fellow commissioners, Chris Bertram and Martha Stonebrook. Just for the record, all three members of the commission are present here at the Anchor location. Today is August the 12th, 2025, and it is 4:01 in the afternoon. So we are convened here today, this public meeting. We have two items on the agenda. The first of which is to review a complaint received by Sergeant Craig Tischner. Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Regarding the 2025 Lieutenant promotional examination. And then that will be followed up by an annual Open and Public Meetings Act training that the commission will receive from Zach Lancaster with the county DA's office. So let me just kind of lay some foundation for this first agenda item. So back in April, early April of this year, actually on April 7th, Sergeant Tischner filed a formal grievance. This was in response to or following the 2025 Lieutenant's promotional examination that was rendered. And that complaint was filed in a timely manner, and the commission was notified about that grievance, and in the process we asked the Mayor Commission staff to follow up as per policy to conduct an administrative review to essentially provide us a report with regarding the complaint, looking into the facts and reporting those back to the commission. We, as a commission, felt like there were some clarifying questions that we wanted to ask, and so we had previously arranged for a time for Sergeant Tischner to come before the commission and address some of the clarifying questions that we were asking regarding his particular complaint. And so we did that, but we did not do that in an open setting as required by the Public Meetings Act, that is a state law. So we want to now come back and make sure that we're following that process. It's been an education process for us as a commission. That's the reason we are going to, here on out, receive annual training just to make sure that we are in compliance with the law. Anytime that we do meet as a body, it's important for us to conduct our business and to be open and transparent about that. And that's something that we as a commission have always valued and felt is important to do. So we are here to just basically go through that same process of review. We'll plan to proceed by just kind of laying some groundwork, some understanding about the grievance itself, and address any clarifying questions that we have of you, Sergeant. You're here today. We'll note that for the record as well, and go through that process of reviewing just like we did before this particular grievance. And so this is a new process, really, for all intents and purposes. Again, we just want to make sure that we're following the law and compliant. And so with that, we'll launch into that first item. Any questions from members of the commission before we proceed? Let me just lay out then, it's again, this is kind of new to us too in this particular setting, but it's not that this is the first grievance that the commission has received following a promotional exam process. We've had these issues come up before. And if there is enough information that we have to be able to make a decision, then we certainly, the policy and statute allows us to do that. And so in this particular case, again, Sergeant Tischner filed in a timely manner on April the 7th. And basically the complaint was regarding two phases of the process. There were three, if I'm not mistaken. And there were some issues that occurred during that examination process. During phase two of that examination process, there was an oral interview. And each of the candidates who were up or participating in this examination process were asked to respond to 7 oral interview questions. Sergeant Tishner asserts the visible clock that was used to time. This was a timed activity. I believe there were 30 minutes that each candidate was allowed to complete that interview. And during the process of that phase of the examination, the visible clock failed, and he had no way of accurately tracking his time. He states that he had to guess, basically, how much time remained while answering the question, leading him to omit important information that he had prepared. He believed that this technical failure created an uneven playing field in comparison to other candidates who were able to effectively manage their time with a working clock during the time of their presentation. In phase three, that consisted of a leadership presentation. So his grievance in that case is in regard to an email clarification that was sent out to all candidates. That email came from the merit administrator following a candidate asking for clarification about the leadership presentation, this third phase of the exam. Sergeant Tishner asserts that due to the timing of the email and his inability to check his inbox until later, this communication placed him at a disadvantage compared to other candidates who received and adjusted to the clarification sooner. And so there's some details around that that we can address further as we proceed with this review. So does that seem to fairly capture the essence of the grievance, Sergeant?
Yes, but I have a prepared statement, if it's okay if I could read it.
Okay, any opposition to that? Okay, please go ahead.
Okay. So to the Merit Commission. I appreciate the opportunity to address the handling of my recent grievance regarding the Lieutenant's promotional exam. My intention is not to be adversarial, but to shed light on areas where the process can be improved for the benefit of all current and future candidates. I filed my grievance in accordance with the Merit Commission policy, and I believed it contained valid concerns that warranted objective review. As there were questions surrounding the matter, the Commission appropriately sought a more detailed explanation. However, when the findings were submitted to the Commission by HR, I was not granted access to their conclusions as permitted under current policy. Instead, the Commission met as a quorum to discuss my grievance, and I was asked to explain my position again. Unfortunately, this occurred without me having knowledge of the findings HR had submitted. This process raised concerns for 2 reasons. 1. Violation of the Utah State Open Public Meeting Act. Meeting as a quorum without proper public notice or transparency appears to be inconsistent with the requirements of the act. 2. Lack of due process. I was asked to respond to vague questions without knowing the specific conclusions or points raised by HR. This made it difficult to fully articulate or defend my grievance and created the perception that HR's response held more weight than my own. In addition, I believe the dual role of HR as both the administrator of the exam and the administrator of the Merit Commission presents a potential conflict of interest. While I am not alleging any bad faith or ill intent from anyone involved, the structure alone may contribute to a perception of bias, especially for those going through the grievance process. I want to be clear. I value the fact that we have a mechanism to challenge promotional testing outcomes. However, the process I experienced did not align with the transparency and fairness that I believe that are intended by the policy. For this reason, I respectfully suggest that a revision of the Merit Commission's grievance process is warranted. While I did file a complaint with the Attorney General's office, bringing us all here today, My goal is to not dwell on the past. I'm committed to being a constructive voice in this process. Let bygones be bygones. And let's work together to ensure a fair, transparent, and consistent grievance process for all employees moving forward. Since I have experienced this process firsthand, I would be more than willing to assist in shaping a better path forward. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. I think, you know, it's important to note that, being open and transparent is not only required by law, but it's important to us as a commission. So I appreciate, I'm sure my fellow commission members appreciate your response and your prepared statement, especially as it relates to the process. As imperfect as these things sometimes are, I think, you know, if there's an opportunity that we see to do better, then we absolutely want to do that. And so I think we all agree, I think I feel free in speaking for my fellow commissioners, that we don't disagree with what you've stated today. So anything that we can do to help improve and make this process going forward. I think, you know, because of this, we have in fact, as recently as this past week, entertained some policy changes to help clarify that what we do, we need to make sure we do out in the public and to be open about that. So I think that's hopefully evidence of a step in the direction that you're talking about. But
absolutely.
Hoping to see that we do proceed going forward. So I think we're on the right path. And as far as the particulars of this grievance today, I think as a commission, the limits of what we have to consider is the actual grievance. And so it's not that we're going to disregard the other suggestions that you've made. I think we agree that where we can, we ought to make those sort of improvements. But today we are going to just address those specific issues that were raised in your grievance. So just as we did before, in part kind of laying that foundation and providing context was really as much for our benefit as it was for everybody else here to kind of have some sense of what we're talking about. And so we will take time to ask any clarifying questions again to make sure that we're addressing the particulars of the grievance as you presented it on April the 7th. So with that, I'll open it up to the commission. Sergeant, did you have anything?
Yes, so moving into that section, I do have another prepared statement for that section, if you don't mind me if I read that too as well.
Okay, any opposition to that, commissioners?
No.
Okay.
If the Merit Commission proceeds to discuss my grievance in detail in a public forum, I am concerned that it may set a precedent of how such matters are handled moving forward. Although I am happy to discuss my grievance publicly, I respectfully suggest that this discussion be conducted in a different format. Not for my personal benefit, but to help establish a more appropriate and respectful process. It is important that other employees do not feel intimidated or exposed by having their grievances or personal matters discussed in an open meeting. To that end, I recommend that this meeting be continued or postponed until a clear policy or process is put in place for addressing these issues in a more suitable and confidential manner. However, if today's meeting is merely a formality prompted by my complaint to the Attorney General's office and the outcome has already been predetermined, I see that no need to continue this discussion. In that case, please refer to my original statement for the record, which is right here.
Okay.
I just don't want to set precedents moving forward with
it. Yeah, and Sergeant, I would just tell you that, one, this is back out on the table. The slate is clean. And I would presume that you've been provided the statement that you weren't provided prior, correct? And you reviewed what our findings were and what it was based on. Have you been able to review that?
No, I am not privy to the findings of what they came up with.
Okay.
And that my understanding is it's Merit Commission policy that restricts me from being able to see that, which restricts me.
So, Merit Commission policy states that the report and recommendation will be provided to the commission.
Okay.
So that's who it was provided to.
Okay. And so So it would be during this hearing, we would then be able to maybe give Sergeant a copy of that. He could review it for our discussion purposes when we go through this, or no?
I'll defer to counsel on
that. Yeah, and I was going to actually just say, let's just kind of push the pause button for just a second, because I know for myself, and I don't want to speak for my other fellow commissioners here, I mean, at least in terms of the sergeant's second statement, what are our options at this point in terms of...
So, whenever we're meeting to have a forum, which we are here, we have two of the three body members, it always is going to begin as an open meeting. Now, if we're going to discuss the character competency of an individual employee, you can vote to go into a closed session. So that would be the option in terms of if we want to do this in an open meeting or in a closed meeting.
Okay.
In terms of, I don't know, I'm not as familiar with the grievance and
okay.
how much relates to that or it's more administrative.
Okay, so not to put you on the spot, just for the record, though, Zach Lancaster is from the county DA's office. He is representative of legal counsel for the commission, and so that's why we're turning to him and asking this question. So
yeah.
I guess what you're saying is we need to make a determination as to whether or not this constitutes
yeah.
discussion of the competency of an individual. Or
yes, exactly. So if that's what this discussion is going to delve into, then yeah, I would recommend it be a closed meeting. I'm not as familiar with this issue, but if this is just administrative, like how was the process handled, then that's not delving into the character competency
okay.
of...
Can I...
Okay, and that's helpful. So thank you. Carita?
So the Attorney General's office also said that if he withdraws his grievance and then the prior decision of the Merit Commission would also be withdrawn, that we would not need to move forward. Absent that, we would need to move forward, and as Mr. Lancaster just clarified, it's not dealing with something that we can close the meeting.
Yeah.
So I think those are our choices, move forward with the public meeting, or Mr. Chisner can choose to withdraw his grievance. The original decision of the Merit Commission will also be withdrawn, and then, like you said, wiping, you know, the slate clean. I don't think it means that I would be happy to meet with you or one, you know, Commissioner Salazar separately to go over, you know, concerns. But as far as this meeting, those are our choices.
So let me just bring it back to the commission then. And again, commissioners, feel free to speak.
Could I add my thoughts to this? Certainly not getting into any of the specifics, but since we're talking about whether really or not we covered the policy, what we were supposed to do, I'm looking at that 4910, and it goes into these administrative reviews. Do you have a copy of that, sir?
I'm not sure if I've got that specific. Which number is it?
I can give him 4910. You've got it.
And
okay.
On the second page, it's a two-page document, it says at the top that the Merit Commission may refer the complaint, which was your letter that you shared with us. We may refer the complaint to the Merit Commission staff for initial review and investigation, and may request the staff provide a report and recommendation to the Merit Commission for its consideration. The reason I'm saying this is to give you an idea of what we were attempting to do in this. So we did that, and then we sent it here to Ms. Lucy, and they did the investigation and the report and recommendation, and we're not going into that right now since you don't have a copy in front of you. But then it says that the Merit Commission may conduct a review and investigation itself. Well, we chose to first have theirs, but then this is what theirs, just a discussion for a moment. In 2.6, it says the Merit Commission may determine the specific methods to be used for matters reviewed under sections 2.4 or 2.5, including but not limited to private interviews, review of documents, public hearings and discussion, or any other process which the Merit Commission finds appropriate and complies with the Utah Open and Public Meetings Act. My recollection of our discussion, and it was at least from my point, I was via Zoom, and we were talking with you more than, I don't know, having, you know, the plaintiff side and the defendant speak, and then thus and such. We were using it more to see what we could glean from you that wasn't fleshed out, for instance, in your complaint. That was at least my understanding of it. So whether or not my understanding was correct or not, it bears mention if we're talking about the inadequacies of the Merit Commission policies or the need to refresh it or, you know, revise it or reject it entirely. That to me is one area where we could be feeling like we are interviewing you and having you give a chance to speak. Other people were interviewed via Ms. Lucy and her staff. And so I may have been totally off the chart on that, but that's my thought on it. And I would like to know what really that means, if indeed we trigger 2.4 and have the complaint investigated by the Merit Commission staff. And maybe, you know, that's something for Mr. Lancaster there, or
whatever. Yeah, I'd say for the purpose of this meeting, I believe it was noticed as a discussion of the grievance.
Right.
Yeah. So I think this is a good topic to discuss in terms of what policy changes should be made. I would say that should be noticed in a different public meeting, and then we can discuss that sort of in isolation versus
right.
what this one was scheduled for.
Okay, so let me just jump in here then. So again, following up with Mr. Lancaster has just said, it seems that the question we have before us, commissioners, is if this does not constitute, or our discussion does not constitute discussing the competency of an individual. This really is having to do with the issue. The process is what is issue. And we don't have the option to come to closed session
I kind of brought up whether Sergeant Tishner believed that this had to do with his character, and that was the only thing I thought would close the meeting.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that this is
that's not the question before us,
right?
And it is the process. So the question really, I think, falls back to you then, Sergeant, is you have as Creed has mentioned. You have the option to waive, I'm trying to remember the right term that you used, was it waive?
To withdraw
the grievance. And if that's not your decision, then we are here to address the grievance. And I think the only option we have as a commission, according to requirements of the Open and Public Meetings Act, is to discuss it in open. So I'm going to throw the question to you, is if you want to continue with this, then I see that the only path forward for us is to have the discussion and to deliberate and to do everything in public. And the only way for us to not do that would be for you to withdraw the grievance. So not to put you on the spot or to pressure you, but that's the issue before us.
Okay. The only concern that I have, and I'll reflect back to my second statement real quick, is it's important that other employees do not feel intimidated or exposed by having their grievances or personal matters discussed in an open meeting. Because the Merit Commission handles more than just grievances. They handle emotions, all that stuff, right? So I want, if it means, and this is coming from me, if it means withdrawing my grievance to make a better process, where moving forward, where employees have the ability to not have to discuss any of these topics in an open meeting, I'd be willing to do that.
Okay, now, Commissioner, That being said, I think that, I mean, what is clear to us now as a commission is that there is no question going forward that any time that we receive a grievance, whether it's regarding an examination process such as what you've submitted, or it's a disciplinary action, even up to somebody's termination, any time that we meet as a body and there's a quorum, it has to be public.
Yep.
And so it will be open to the public. So your withdrawing the grievance is not going to change that going forward. We've established, if anything, from this point going forward, that that is the process that we must and should follow.
That, you know, that is true. However, what you were talking about, Sergeant, is I have had experience with that quite often. Certainly in the public employment, the sexual harassment, the wrongful termination, the discrimination for a host of different orientations or other situations, more so than just on you know, the procedures for testing purposes and things of that nature. And during those times, they were public, whether it was down to the very end when there were the witnesses being called and all of these different things. It was an open meeting, even if it was scheduled for two full days. That it's open, but once you get to the issue that is sensitive or that talks about the competencies of the individual, for instance, in a wrongful termination, you can't just say, you know, this person was just worthless and expect that person to be able to gather himself or herself up enough to go and apply somewhere else, and that can be chilling. But you're able to close it and then meet in a closed session to discuss just those issues, not the issue of, you know, did she, you know, was the job description for his or her position clear enough versus what it was alleged caused whatever the unfortunate determination was, whether it's sexual harassment and so forth. And so there is that, and that you get from the Utah Open Meetings Act and even the state and city laws, you know, go into those types of things. And Mr. Lancaster can quickly correct me if I'm wrong, but we did that often in front of the Civil Service Commission of Salt Lake City and in other venues. But would that be something then, sir, that would make you feel a little bit better that you would not be, by withdrawing it, should you decide to or not, make any difference in chilling the other people's abilities to come forward or to challenge actions that have been taken against them by the government here?
So there are mechanisms that can take place as far as where conversations can happen within a quorum, but not meeting as a quorum, right? It's an individual reach out to each, and then whatever their discussion is. I mean, that there are several options on that. So, but policy has to meet state statute.
Right. And
so,
that's what I was talking about.
is what I'm saying here is as the commission moves forward at looking at changing some of the policies, updating on making sure that they're matching state statute and following what they're supposed to be following as far as the Open Public Meetings Act. Just like I said in my last line here is, I am committed to being a constructive voice in this process. Let bygones be bygones. Mm-hmm. And let's work together to ensure a fair, transparent, and consistent grievance process for all employees moving forward. So we're talking about two separate issues here. We're talking about my specific grievance, and then we're talking about the process of the grievance. The process of the grievance is where it was the lack of due process, but that's because of Merit Commission policy, where I'm not privy to the findings of what they come up with. So I can have conversations and counter those or say that's not true or provide proof or evidence on that. Just like a court case, it all needs to be laid out on the table. But unfortunately, policy restricts that. Now, whether that's state statute, I'm not going to answer that. But is what I am saying is that's one of the mechanisms that I think would be fair is at least to the grievance process of whatever their findings are, which you pointed out in the Merit Commission policy, where you have different options that you can seek and have that conversation with the Merit Commission staff. And then that could also give the choice of the candidate whether they want to withdraw or not or go into public. Because what I want to do is I want to make sure that the Merit Commission is there, what they're supposed to be there for, the protection and the fairness of listening and the unbiased of the employees. I hope that makes sense.
I would just, as a commissioner, I would tell you that I support your right to go through this due process. I really do, and I want to hear your complaint, and I would never weigh into whether you would withdraw. In fact, I don't think that the commission should weigh into your question as to whether you should withdraw. That is, it's not ours. We are here for you to listen to it. I understand that there may be things that have been discovered based on that it can be improved, things that based on your grievance that can be improved. And I think that maybe not as for today, but it is something that we can look at the future. You talk about looking toward the future.
Yes.
But I want to encourage you that I think all these commissioners and myself, for as long as I've been here and as an employee, believe in this process, and that you as an employee can go through it in the best possible due process, you know, that we can offer you. So that's what if you're asking for our recommendation whether you should withdraw it, I don't recommend that. And I don't think, let me back up, I don't even think that we should weigh into that. I think you should, you know, move forward in the way that you want to, and I hope it's through this due process.
Yeah. And just to clarify, I was not suggesting whether you would or would not withdraw your...
I didn't take it as such.
Okay, fine,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yes. So my only concern is for the completion part of the due process is if I decide to move forward to at least have the opportunity to look at the HR's findings of my complaint, and then I can work that out whether I want to proceed or not. My understanding, and I'm not an attorney and I'm not counsel, but I can tell you on a certain policy, if a commission says yes, go ahead and give them that, it should be fine, because it's policy, it's not state statute at that point, if that makes sense. So I guess is what I'm asking now is, if we want to move forward on the specific grievance, I would respectfully request a full due process, which is to see what HR's findings are on my complaint.
Do we never give these out? Have we in the past?
I would defer to Zach on that. We have not. The policy it states that it will go to Merit Commission staff. So that's who to the Merit Commission. So that's who I have provided it to. As far as anyone else, I would defer to counsel.
So created for clarification, where it in policy is the policy 4910, where that's stated. That reference that you're
yes.
speak of, can you cite the specific section?
Yeah, so 2.4, the Merit Commission may refer the complaint to the Merit Commission staff for initial review and investigation, and may request staff provide a report and recommendation to the Merit Commission for its consideration.
Right. And we did that.
Yeah.
We did that.
Yes,
step.
Yes. So for the record, policy 4910 is one of two policies that we addressed last week.
Yes.
And we did approve some changes to this policy, but that section remains exactly the same. There was no change to that.
And just to clarify, I mean, under 2.6, the Merit Commission may determine the specific methods to be used for the matter reviewed under the section. which could include us providing him with that report.
I might have to look back to Zach. And my read on this is that there's nothing here that precludes the commission from doing whatever we choose to do after the report is delivered to us. But it's clear that the Merit Commission staff provide that report to us.
Right.
And then we can opt and decide whether or not to share that.
So
if we want to have some discussion about that, I mean, I think that certainly pertains to is related to this grievance, I would say. And we can decide. Sergeant Tishner has indicated that if he has an opportunity, if we opt to give him that, then he can decide whether or not he wants to further pursue the grievance.
So we could perhaps, just throwing this out here, that that after we get it, after it's returned to us, then the Merit Commission may conduct its own review and investigation itself if we choose, then we may in 2.6 determine the specific methods to be used for matters reviewed under this, including but not limited to, and then we could add and direct that a copy of the report and recommendation be provided to the petitioner prior to any hearing on the matter, administrative.
Yeah, and if we're gonna make any further changes to the policy, that will need to be addressed as a separate, as its own issue. But that's certainly something that we can do going forward.
I just simply am trying to make sure that I personally am understanding what you there, sir, are saying. If we had it in there, that it would. In the specific, you're provided with it in advance.
Yes.
And I would just add to that, I think under 2.6, and Zach may weigh into this, but I said that, you know, it's not limited to private interviews, review of documents, public hearings, discussions. And I think that under that 2.6, I'm not sure that we need to add it. We can provide, based on our discretion, we can provide it.
I would say it's permissive by the way it's stated.
Sure,
it's not excluded.
We just don't want to forget that.
No, understood.
You know, I'm just trying to say, would that be the idea that if we made it so that permissive or otherwise we do it, if you had that?
Yeah, and I would say in terms of like discussing future changes to the policy, I would not talk about that, discuss that in this meeting because that needs to be noticed up differently.
Sure.
I think, but what we can talk about is Tishner's request to review it in his grievance and whether you want to allow that.
I just was trying to find out from his initial statements.
Okay, and I think he responded in the affirmative that is. So I'm gonna close public comment right now. I just want to bring this back to the commission. So as a discussion among commissioners. Your thoughts on, and again, we don't necessarily have a precedent set before. Surely we have had grievances before in cases like this. We've asked Merit Commission staff to conduct basically the initial review and investigation and provide a report back to the commission. This has all been done before, but I'm just not aware, certainly in my time, that there's been a request or consideration given to providing the report that was provided to us.
Mm-hmm.
And my personal sense is that, I mean, there's nothing in that report that I feel like would need to be redacted or, you know, or that in any way would need to be altered. I don't see necessarily that there would be any grave concern or issue in providing that. That's just my initial thought.
And I'll just say under the policy that we just passed, the 4910, and under 2.5 and 2.6, I think it would be appropriate at this time, based on our discussions here within the meeting, based on the fact that we're doing an administrative review on this, that Sergeant Tishner has indicated that he would like to go forward if he could get a copy of the report, review it, and come back for another administrative review to allow us to make a decision as to whether we move forward with something more formal. And I think at this point, I think it would be wise in my opinion, to give him the report, allow him to review it, come back at a future date, to have another administrative review with regards to this. Commissioner?
I would agree to that.
Okay. All right.
Could I just add one other caveat? Unless in the interim he decides to withdraw.
And I was just going to add that myself. Also, what was stated is that he could review that, and then he would decide basically whether to proceed or not. So
allow that, please.
So that's at this point that is a request. I think we can certainly entertain that request as it relates to the grievance.
Sure.
So it's probably best, I think, for us to entertain a motion, I guess, to make this formalize the decision going forward. So
I'll make a motion at this point that we table the administrative, or we cease the administrative review at this point and allow Sergeant Tischner to have a copy of the report and recommendations that were provided by staff, and then allow him a reasonable amount of time to review that and schedule another administrative review.
Yes.
Based on that. Okay. Go ahead.
Could I just say one thing? Well, so this has been outstanding since April, right?
Yes.
And so if we could schedule a date for the next administrative review, right, and then he knows his, time frame, then, going forward we can make sure we're timely, addressing things and, that's not laying out there.
And I was actually going to suggest the same thing. That, again, I think laying some time frame for this, because we don't want it to be out there indefinitely. It's taken as long as it has just to get to this point. So I think that is important. So as long as that's agreeable, you understand that will be a condition. And
I was actually going to make that recommendation.
Okay.
And I think 30 days is reasonable. And the reason I say 30 days is I'm kind of hoping that I can get a copy of that in a reasonable manner as well. So,
well, we wouldn't start the clock until the time that you actually receive it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
send that today. Yeah.
I'm going to maybe suggest
restate your motion.
What's that?
You want me to restate your motion?
Well, let's maybe have a little bit of discussion. Well, I guess you can state the motion, then have some discussion.
So let me just restate based on the. So restate the motion that we would. We would table at this point the administrative review for Sergeant Tischner. We would allow Sergeant Tischner the report and recommendations that were provided to us based on his grievance, and then set a reasonable timeline that we can maybe after the second discuss in discussion as to what we want to do, but a reasonable timeline to get the next admin, and again, scheduled for another administrative review to decide where we go forward.
I would second that.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded that we provide a copy of the report to Sergeant Tischner, and that we then could have some discussion about what time frame would be appropriate. So I'm going to
30 days.
Call for discussion. I'm actually going to suggest 15 days.
15.
And the reason why I'm going to do that is because the current policy for these administrative reviews allows an individual to make a complaint within 15 calendar days of the event. So I think we start counting from the date in which you provided the report. You will then have 15 days to decide whether or not you want to continue the process or if you decide otherwise. Does that sound?
I'm fine with that. It does stay consistent with the other 15 days of all the others.
Okay. That would be my suggestion.
I agree.
And the only change that I would make in that motion.
That
fine. Okay, so it's been moved and seconded then to provide that report and provide Sergeant Tischner then in this case 15 calendar days from the date he receives the report in order to decide how he would like to proceed. So all in favor of moving in that direction, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. So
we do have a public comment and a question, and they want to know if the report will be made public.
Well, I would say.
Hold on a second.
It would depend on what the contents of the report are. But,
I feel it's time to notice that for the hearing when it needs.
Yeah, but in terms of whether the actual document is public.
Okay.
that would be under grandma.
And the grievance itself, the initial grievance, I don't believe is out there for public consumption either.
Yes, it wouldn't be available at this juncture for sure.
Okay.
Under grandma.
So perhaps at some future date, but not at this time, I would say, is probably a reasonable response to that.
Okay. Thank you for, and we'll see, do we have any other public comments in the chat?
Thank you for pointing that out.
Yes, yes.
Sometimes get caught up here in the moment and forget that there's people online.
It was somebody's question, which was really good.
Yeah, and I probably should open it up for any other,
okay, and we'll, and we'll do that, so.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
Do we have any other comments from anybody?
Sorry, I'm not speaking out of mind here, but you've got to make a motion to go into a public comment.
But no, I don't think that we have to make a motion for that.
No,
we that's something we do customarily. Is
we always do that.
Okay, so we are accepting public comment at this point. There is
Matt Thompson.
Yes.
Just question on how that affects the outcome of the previous test. Is the list still certified, or is there anything that in this process that would call into question the certification of the list?
That's a good question.
So right now, what we're dealing with is the grievance. And so if you want to talk to me separately, I'd be happy to answer that. But right now, like I said, we're limited to the grievance. Yeah.
So to be determined.
Good.
It is probably...
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to notice the certification of the list and have an open meeting on that in particular if you wanted to.
So we're addressing the administrative review right now.
Just to be clear, Zach, the list is already certified.
Yeah, I'm saying is if you wanted to open that topic up, what I'm saying is the topic itself, whether that wants to be, that wouldn't be proper to be discussed in this forum. We have a quorum convened for the discussion of two items, none of which were that. Does that make sense?
I guess to clarify, does the grievance have the possibility of having an effect on that?
I think in terms of the order of things, and I don't recall exactly, so maybe you can refresh my memory, Sarita, at the time that the grievance had to be filed within 15 days after the examination process was completed.
Exactly.
And at that point, we hadn't yet certified, is that correct? Had not been certified.
The list hasn't been certified, yes.
No.
At that point,
at the time of the grievance, it had not been certified, yes.
So, it's a good question. It's a valid question. I don't know that we have a final answer for you on that just yet. So,
I'd say you need to determine the resolution of this grievance and then
what potential impact
remedies
if there
applicable
is.
Or,
So. Okay, any other public comment, either from anybody present in the room or online? And I believe those of you online have the ability to unmute yourself. So feel free to speak, ask questions, provide other comment. Anything further online?
No.
Okay, seeing no other public comment or hearing that there are any others who make a comment, we're going to close that public comment then. And I think where that leaves us then is we will be providing you, Carita will provide that directly to you, and then we'll start counting from that day forward, 15 calendar days.
Okay.
That's fair.
Okay. All right. I think that closes this first agenda item then.
Yes.
Okay.
And I would file a motion that we're ready to move on to number two.
Okay, we're gonna, I think we're good, even without a motion, but that's a great suggestion, so we'll take it. With that, so thank you, Sergeant. You're welcome to stay for the remainder of the meeting. We are in fact going to receive a training again, as I stated before, this will be annual training that we will receive as a commission. If anything, it's a good reminder to us about what the requirements of the law are, and here to deliver that training to us today is Mr. Zach Lancaster. If you'll come to the table, please. We'll ask you to just dig in and...
Care if I make a quick comment?
We're not taking public comment right at this time. So if you want to stay and make a comment... Okay. You're welcome.
No, I think it's
for the prime time.
All right.
Thank you for coming and being so, you know, nice about the whole thing and letting us work through it. Appreciate
much
you.
Respect to all of you.
Okay, all right.
You go. Stay safe out there.
Thanks. All right. So, annual Open Public Meetings Training Act. There's a bunch of different ways we can do this. This is a good one to do in person. And so, the format. I'm going to leave sort of up to how you want to proceed, but essentially I was going to show a short video that kind of gives a good summation of all that, and then we can have any specific questions. Does that work?
Okay, sure.
We'll follow your lead. And everybody online will be able to here, this is hooked into.
Yes.
They should share.
Yeah.
Okay. If he shares his screen with the monitors.
All right.
I will share it on my iPad.
No, he should just be able to find the room.
Maybe. He's kind of our tech guru, so I'm sending him over.
I don't know. It's saying I'm sharing, but it's really not.
Yeah, share screen.
We would see that
share
the board.
Yep. What are you saying? Maybe Chief Hugh knows something here.
This is a WebEx, is it?
Yeah.
And he's a presenter.
No, he's not a presenter on it, I don't think.
You might need to.
And it might be because we're not logged in.
Okay.
We'll figure out the technology. Everyone stand by.
It wasn't sharing it, but it's not. Okay. I can switch to my laptop. I could probably do that better than I'm.
Oh, there you go.
That's your computer. Yeah.
Zach, we're going to be downstairs just watching your video going, why am I watching?
Can I just suggest that maybe let's take a five-minute
break? Okay, everyone online, we're taking a five-minute break.
And we'll reconvene here. It's 4:54 now, so let's say 5 after 5.
It looks like it's starting to show now, Zach.
Toetta, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I hear you.
Okay. And we have a screen up that says what. Hopefully you can see that. That's the training.
Yes, sir. We can see it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. If you'll remute, that would be great.
Okay. So we are back on the record and ready to reconvene, launching into the training, Zach, that you have for us. So
sure.
Fire away.
All right. Hopefully this works.
And deliberations are openly conducted. Before we continue, keep in mind that this video is an overview, and exceptions may exist based on your entity type. So what's considered an open and public meeting? It's when a governing body majority meets to discuss or act upon government business. It includes the meetings sometimes referred to as workshops or executive sessions. Regular meetings, public hearings, electronic meetings, and emergency meetings are all open and public meetings. Open and public meetings don't include chance or social meetings. A public hearing is a type of open and public meeting where citizens have a reasonable opportunity to speak. Public hearings happen when a government adopts a budget or imposes or increases taxes or fees. An electronic meeting is a type of open and public meeting that's convened electronically, such as via phone or the internet. Remember, the governing body must adopt a resolution, rule, or ordinance allowing and governing electronic meetings. An open and public meeting may be closed to discuss any of the following: a person's character, competence, or health, security personnel, devices, or systems deployment, collective bargaining, litigation, purchase, sale, or lease of property if an open discussion would prevent the entity from completing the transaction on the best terms, investigations of criminal misconduct, and private or protected information per the Utah Procurement Code, including trade secrets. Two-thirds of the governing body need to vote yes to close a meeting. Quick math lesson. 2 divided by 3 equals 66.7%. Let's say your governing body has 5 members. If 3 out of the 5 members vote yes, that equals 60%, which is not equal to or greater than 66.7%, which means you're 1 member short and instead need 4 out of 5 members to vote yes. During a closed meeting, a governing body can't interview someone applying to fill an elected position, discuss filling a midterm vacancy or temporary absence, discuss the character, competence, or health of a person whose name was submitted for consideration to fill a midterm vacancy or temporary absence, or approve any ordinance, resolution, rule, regulation, contract, or appointment. If a closed meeting is discussing a person's character, competence, or health, or security personnel, devices, or systems deployment, no recording or minutes are required. However, the presiding member needs to sign a sworn written statement stating such. If the closed meeting is held for any other reason, a recording must be made. Emergency meetings may be held to discuss an urgent matter due to unforeseen circumstances. In order to hold the meeting, the best notice that's feasible is provided of the time, location, and topics to be considered. An attempt is made to contact all governing body members, and the governing body majority approves the meeting. Entities that hold regular meetings need to provide notice, at least annually, of the year's meeting schedule. As always, the notice must include date, time, and place. For entities that don't hold regularly scheduled regular meetings, 24 hours notice must be provided. All meetings, whether regularly scheduled in advance over the course of the year, or scheduled as needed, must provide no less than 24 hours notice of meeting agendas. If a public hearing is held, public notice requirements change. Make sure to distinguish between regular meeting notice requirements and public hearing notice requirements. For regular meetings, an entity is only required to notify a newspaper and doesn't need to pay to publish a notice. For public hearings, notice must be published in at least one issue of a newspaper. If a newspaper of general circulation isn't available, written notice is posted in 3 public places within the entity's boundaries. Regular meetings require 24 hours notice. Public hearings require 7 days notice. For both regular meetings and public hearings, written notice must be posted at the principal office of the governing body, or, if no such office exists, at the building where the meeting will be held. Governing bodies must also provide notice of open and public meetings on the Public Notice website at publicnotice.utah.gov. By posting on the website and providing the email of the local newspaper, governing bodies can also meet the requirement to notify a newspaper. However, other requirements such as publishing in a newspaper still apply. Typically, posting on the public notice website is done by the records officer, recorder, or clerk. However, it's the governing body's responsibility to ensure notice is provided. State Archives has prepared a training manual and quick guide for owners and posters, as well as training videos that can be accessed at their website at archives.utah.gov. If your entity is increasing a fee or undergoing truth in taxation for a property tax increase, be aware that there are additional notice and posting requirements. Public meeting agendas need to include reasonably specified topics to be considered, with each topic listed under a separate agenda item on the meeting agenda. The governing body may not consider a topic in an open meeting that wasn't on the agenda. If a new topic not on the agenda is raised by the public during an open meeting, the governing body may discuss the topic. Mm-hmm. However, final action may not be taken on the new topic during that meeting. Meeting minutes and an audio recording are required for all open meetings, with limited exceptions. When an open or closed meeting is required to be recorded, it must be unedited and contain all the portions of the meeting. Recordings of open meetings must be made available within 3 days. Every entity needs to establish procedures for the governing body's approval of minutes. Pending minutes are written minutes prepared in draft form and are subject to change before being approved by the governing body. Pending minutes must contain a clear indication such as a draft or pending watermark, that the governing body hasn't yet approved the minutes and that they're subject to change. Pending minutes must be made available within 30 days. Approved minutes are written minutes of a meeting that have been approved by the governing body. Approved minutes are the official record of the meeting and must be made available within 3 business days. Whoever is responsible for taking the minutes during meetings, typically the records officer, recorder, or clerk, needs to be familiar with what OPMA requires be contained in the minutes. When a governing body closes a meeting, the following must be publicly announced and entered into the minutes of the open meeting at which the closed meeting was approved. The reason or reasons for holding the closed meeting, the location where the closed meeting will be held, and the vote of each member of the governing body, either for or against the motion to close the meeting. The recording and any minutes must include the date, time, and location of the meeting, the names of the governing body members present and absent, and the names of all others present, except where disclosure would infringe on the confidentiality necessary to fulfill the original purpose of closing the meeting.
For more information, access our local government resource center at
Did you put that together yourself?
Does that look like I was just a graphic artist and I am in my spare time? No, that is one that was provided by the auditor's office, the state auditor, that kind of gives you a really good summation of, you know, issues that pertain to the Open Meetings Act in general. And then, you know, if you guys have any specific questions, I'm happy to always answer those. In any manner you want. If you want to do it with the whole body, then we can do that and just notice it up, or I can answer questions to Commissioner Salazar, or you guys can email me questions and I can send those in email form, and then there's no sort of public meeting part of that. So it's a bunch of different ways we can proceed if you have additional questions. So
I was just gonna say, before we proceed, should we close? We're recording right now. And so should we close the meeting for questions, or?
I think it's okay to continue.
Okay.
There's nothing, we're not talking about anything that was one of those excluded topics.
The only reason you would close for an attorney talking to a commission would be is if there is pending litigation or imminent litigation, and I'm not aware of anything like that.
But thank you for watching outside. Commissioner, you have a question?
It's now, if I can remember it. What is the newspaper requirement? Is that still going on? I mean, that was way back when I first started in
So there's
Attorney General's office.
So the newspaper itself requirement, and I'm happy to provide more details on it, that generally applies, off the top of my head, that's more like the taxation things.
And probate, where you're looking for heirs, you know, you're looking for people. We used to have to do that quite a bit for, estate law and probate.
Yeah, so depending on what action you're taking and the type of meeting, it's going to change what the notice requirements are. They have made them a lot easier. They have that transparency website or the public notice website. And I think we post them in our building, which is the government center. And I think that, you know, suffices for most. But if there's ever specific questions.
That's what I was going to say. My take from me hearing this elsewhere and now in the video, that, you know, for the type of meeting that we're holding, publishing on the Utah Open Meetings website meets the requirement for the newspaper, is what I heard.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's just for certain types of meetings where you also would still need to be required to publish in the newspaper, but I don't think that pertains to us.
Yeah, and I'm happy to send you the link that they're talking about in that video, which is a really good resource, which is, I believe it's the Division of Archives, puts it on, and they give you, you know, a lot more information on posting notices and what type of notice is required and that type of thing. I'll probably send it to Creed because I think she's the only one that has to post it, but I'm happy to provide that.
And I mean, if you're interested in having that link, I mean, request to send that to all of us.
For sure.
And we have this referred back to in case there are questions at any time.
Yeah.
Other questions?
Zach, just I noticed in there, we kind of maybe addressed, is that if the public brings up a subject that is not on the agenda items, it does indicate that you can have that discussion.
Yeah, you can have that discussion, but you can't take any action on it.
Right.
So that's always a fun line. So like, you know, when like, for example, here we had a member of the public bring up, you know, whether the list, the certified list, right?
Right.
So you could talk about it generally, but you couldn't take action on it.
Yeah.
And I would say it says you can, and I think that's probably more for like elected officials, you know, who want to be responsive to their constituents. I would advise that if, you know, an issue comes up like that, it's better to notice it out, and then, you know, if you're going to have a discussion about it, notice it, and then anybody who's interested can do it, rather than just someone who happened to be here who raised it.
And that was a very complicated issue, because it does bring up the fact that there's...
Yeah.
Issue.
It does.
It is, and so I wondered if we could at least, I mean, in that circumstance, we wouldn't be violating if we started to have a discussion, Carita weighed into that or something, but it would be, I mean, I agree that we should notice it, because there is, I mean, you have a certified list, and what he's saying, I think what he's asking is, would it close off the list at that point? And I'm not having the discussion now, I'm just using that as an example that where would be the line of having that discussion?
So, and that's kind of why I'm talking about it's better to notice it, because you can have the discussion, but ultimately the deliberation and the action has to be taken in a meeting where it was noticed.
Right.
So you would be doing kind of what we did here a little bit, which was a recap sort of, if you have something that's happened in a meeting where it wasn't noticed, then you're going to sort of have to recap it too, kind of what the discussion was. You can't just open up a meeting and say, here's what we decided and we're done. You'd have to kind of
it seems there has to be too, like, some boundaries, right? Because then the whole meeting could be discussed on something that doesn't, like policy changes.
Yeah.
I want to discuss policy changes. And so in my mind, they can make comments and we can say, thank you, we agree. But we don't necessarily, the commissioner and the merit commission staff, have to engage in that discussion. So he made, you know, a comment, you know, about the list. I let him know, you know, he can, you know, talk with him after, which, you know, he did. But I think that's where we can control it, is they can make the comment, but then, you know, we can say, you know, we're going to, you know, stick to the, you know, agenda items and not answer questions regarding that.
Yeah.
So I just want to draw to your attention, commissioners, something new that is on this agenda. You'll notice that there is at the bottom of the agenda
a public
comment. And what we've indicated there is that individuals who wish to speak, you know, are limited, number one, at the time, so that we have some control over it.
Into places.
Yeah. But they can also, my understanding of the law is that they can make a comment about anything.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be about something that's on the agenda, but
and then someone can respond as far as a discussion, but I don't think it requires us to answer questions about policy.
And I think they're it's important to maintain
focus.
Well, focus and control in the meeting too. And that's so one person says something and then somebody says something else. I mean, public comment is taken one individual at a time, and we do have the ability to control that. And I will tell you, as a chair, I will control that.
Sure.
Yeah,
that's good.
And if I need to cut somebody off to say,
that's enough.
It's not your time yet. And so if you wish to make a comment, you may, but right now this individual is the one who's speaking.
Yeah.
And again, if they choose to comment about anything, again, whether it's on the agenda or not, that's my understanding. We just can't take formal action on it, and we needn't even continue to the discussion ourselves, especially if there's business that we need to address, and that needs to be the priority.
Yeah, like I'm sure all of you guys have been to either a county council meeting or a city council meeting where they have the, you know, usually a public comment in the beginning, and they can talk about whatever they want. Maybe it's something that's on the agenda coming up, maybe it's not, but it's just their opportunity to access their local government and provide input. So that's really the format of it.
Okay, good questions. Other questions? questions, and I may know that same thing. I just want to make sure that we're clear as a commission then, when it comes to that.
I have a question. Do we need to, when we start a meeting, you know, we have an introduction and whatever, but do we have to say, in addition, that it's the date such and such, it's 4 p.m., that we're here, the three of us are present, but then we used to say something to the effect of that we have verified that on the website, thus and such, in this other place, it's been duly noticed.
Yeah, so...
Do you have to say something magic like that?
Well, so you're supposed to identify the date, the time, the members of that are present or
right.
absent. I'm not sure if it's a record-keeping thing, that it makes it easier if you have that in your minutes of where you've posted it, but
okay,
I don't know if you actually...
Okay, because I thought they said in there that you... kind of had to.
You have to do it, I guess. What you're
and
asking
how would
me
you
is,
do it then, unless.
You know what I'm saying is, what you're saying is, do we have to say it in the open meeting?
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you have to say. I'll look into it. I'm not sure off the top of my head if you have to say that it's been published
well,
or not.
But you,
fast.
Yeah.
You could.
And I know Commissioner
yeah.
Wallentine
used to
make a point of saying that.
Yeah,
while.
No, it's helpful too for. Meetings for records
yeah.
for that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's. I know it's required that it happened. I don't know if it's required that it's stated in the meeting.
But by stating it, I could see the benefit of that. Then somebody couldn't say, "Well, we didn't receive notice of that."
For sure. For
yeah.
sure.
So,
no, I agree. I think it's a great practice for sure.
Okay.
Way.
Well, that's something to think about.
Okay, anything else? Any other burning questions?
I just have a question. I actually asked Zach in between, but just wanted to clarify with you. So Mr. Tishner had asked that, you know, these types of things not, you know, be public. And, you know, you look and there's different ways to conduct, you know, these administrative reviews. However, my question to Mr. Lancaster was, regardless of how it's conducted, doesn't the commission have to convene as a quorum, deliberate, and make the decision in public? And he said yes. So regardless of you know, how you choose to do, you know, administrative review, that is, you know, would become a public meeting, and that's what the Public Meeting Act requires. And that's what I thought that, you know, he wanted by filing, you know, with the Attorney General's
yeah.
office was the public meeting. And so you know, now we're aware of that, and but I just wanted to be clear that we can't go back.
Yeah.
You know.
And that would, and not correct me if I'm wrong, but that would also extend to, like in the past when we have had pre-hearing conferences.
Yeah.
Any time that we convene as a
body
quorum, we have that has to be noticed up. And,
yep.
And. That's not something I had ever really considered before, and we have had those meetings. I don't know whether they were or they weren't, but
yeah.
it's clear that going forward, anytime we're all together, if it's to address business, then we have to, it has to be public notice, and it
yeah.
is open to the public.
Yeah.
And that would include...
Unless we close it.
But
yeah. Unless we close it, but otherwise, even, I mean, it's a pre-hearing conference, if it's a hearing, if it's 2 days, whatever, like you said, Commissioner,
mm-hmm.
you know, you've had experience before.
But you have to, but once you deliberate the parts that are public, you can discuss in public, and then you can move to close to discuss the competency, the whatever, the three things.
Character
and they added one
health,
more
health
of the medical
yeah.
issues and
yeah.
what have you, and then you go back in. It's a very big hassle, but you go back
yeah.
in, discuss those, how you would, you know, vote and how it would impact your decision, and then you fashion a statement that comes out and lets them know this is the way we have concluded. There, you know, was. It's, you know, the sexual harassment, without elaborating, occurred. She's returned to her, you know, whatever, her position, those kinds of things, without giving away anything that wasn't in the initial opening salvo anyway.
Yeah, and it's an important thing to remember, which sometimes gets lost on us as government employees is that the default that everything we do is public, you know? And so, I mean, there was a famous case involving the Deseret News in Salt Lake County, which was a sexual harassment case. And in that case, the Utah Supreme Court said the entire report is public with all the sordid details, the entire decision based on whether or not that person is, so even character competency and all that. So you can definitely close it, but ultimately a lot of these things are going to be in the public record no matter what. The decision might be in the public record and that. So,
but the timing as to when they become public,
But just the deliberation and all here, and then our final thing, going to affirm the complaint or affirm the county's decision, whatever, you don't have to get into all of those details.
No, you don't. You know, I'm just saying, though, usually when you guys are convening and deliberating, not always, but often there's going to be some sort of a written final product of what that is, and that's generally going to be, you know,
considered
public under grandma's
law. The findings of fact.
Yeah. So,
and conclusions of law.
So the closed meeting thing is sort of an interesting piece of the Open Meetings Act where, you kind of go in and out and in and out, and ultimately, at the end, usually most of the product is going to be public.
Okay. Zach, there was a comment made today that there maybe to solve the public issue was that the individual could meet individually with each of us. To me, that seems counterintuitive to what we just talked about. And I've made it, although, you know, I've got relationships with people that they call with specifically with issues, I've always indicated I'm not going to talk about specific issues with them.
No.
You know, that if they're, you know, in general, there's general things that I'll talk about in private thing, whatever our personal relationship is, but I don't discuss things that are going to be on the agenda coming up.
Yeah, and I think...
And was that recommendation by his even something that would be considered?
So, for the purpose of the Open Meetings Act, he's correct, right? He could meet with you individually. In terms of a practice, is that a good practice for you guys to engage in that? I would say no. Plus, whatever you guys... you're going to still have to come together and deliberate publicly about whatever was raised in the private meeting. It's similar to the staff does a review and provides you guys with a report. You still have to, you know, review the report, deliberate about it in public. And so, I wouldn't recommend that the workaround for Open Meetings Act would be a bunch of individual meetings on issues.
Okay.
I think that's usually generally very helpful.
I think that, you know, we all have a pretty good sense about us and know better than to start down that path.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and well, with respect to giving it out in this instance, it wouldn't have caused any fluff or anything going on, but you can see where you would need to give the person who, let's say, has been terminated, they have to have a lot more of their information for their due process, because it's not just to come before you like this, or even on the WebEx that we did with him where we talked to him and he got to say all of the different things we wanted to say anyway, but whether that was right or wrong, to have it be, and this was part of discovery and all of those things, that makes a big difference. And so it's kind of what you're reviewing, whether or not you'll have to give certain things over.
Yeah, and I think that would be,
there's
a whole bunch of due process questions that are going to be specific depending on what the property interest that's being implicated is, and then what level of process is required.
Right.
And so, yeah, we could definitely.
But do you think that by him not receiving that report and recommendations, do you think that that was a real due process failing? Here, he could come and he talked to us and told us everything that he wanted to do.
I would say it it's a potential due process problem, potentially, but it's not, I wouldn't say yes or no. I think it's too fact specific.
Yeah. And I think it depends entirely too on, you know, what sort of proceeding are we talking about. If it's a formal hearing,
yes,
then I think there are certain specific steps, like boxes that we want to make sure are being checked off. If it's an administrative review, I mean, much less formal, the requirements may not be the same. And so it really, I think, on a case-by-case basis, we decide those things. Okay, well, I don't want to get too far off track.
No, I'm good.
Too far into the weeds, but any other questions pertaining to the material and training? Any clarification? I think, thank you for making time, Zach, and
sure.
We know that if we do have questions, we can at any time reach out and ask for clarification.
Yeah.
And if you can just send us all those links, that would be great, I can read it again.
For sure, yeah.
And we're glad to know that we have you to as a resource. You've worked with this commission for, I lost count now, how many years? A large part of the time that I've been part of this. And so thank you again.
Yeah. For sure.
I think we've concluded our business for today. And so with that, I'm going to move that we adjourn.
A second.
Okay, it's been moved in second. And all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much.